Welcome to Storybrook.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to episode 11 of Hypeable's Onceable podcast, which is all about the TV show Once Upon a Time. I am Jessica, and this week I am joined by Karen and Selena. We have Selena back, so yay!
Hi, guys!
So it's just the three girls this week, which is always fun.
Yeah, appropriate for this week's episode, too, because it was all girl power.
It was. And are you doing all right, Karen?
Yep, I'm good.
Awesome. So, yeah, this was a fun episode. It was called Child of the Moon. It was the seventh episode of season two. And just to recap what happened really quick, we see the dwarves continue to pick away at the Storybrooke mines. They are getting close to ending for the day when Leroy breaks through a patch of rock and he finds the diamonds that can be refined into fairy dust. So, success! Yay! And they go back to Granny's, which is where they seem to go for everything, and celebrate their find. And David is, of course, all excited and fills Henry in on the good news and lets him know the plan, that they're getting one step closer to getting Emma and Mary Margaret back. And then Spencer, who is also known better to us as King George from the fairy tale world, he shows up. And he tells David that he is going to basically break the people's trust, everybody in Storybrooke's trust in David, and reveal that he's really a shepherd and not a prince and isn't fit to lead the people and be sheriff. Well, as all this is happening, Ruby is preparing to face her first full moon since the curse has been broken. She can't find her magic cloak, so she's worried that she'll turn into wolf and hurt somebody, so she has her gran lock her in the freezer. She ends up escaping the freezer and wakes up in the woods. She doesn't remember anything, so she's terrified that she ended up hurting somebody. And David goes to her, and they get a call and find that Billy, the guy who does the tow truck, who is also, we found out this week, Gus from Cinderella.
Yeah.
He is dead. So poor Gus.
Very tragic.
It really is. As we all laugh, but it was really sad that Gus was dead. So Ruby instantly thinks that she's the one that killed Gus, and she starts freaking out, and people around get worried that she's going to kill again because she'll transform that night as well from the full moon. Well, David gives her all of his support and belief that she's innocent. He even makes the comment, a few months ago, Mary Margaret was accused of murder and I didn't stand beside her and I am not going to do that with you. So, which was great. So Spencer kind of riles up the mob and gathers the mob against her and uses this as an opportunity to undermine David as he supports her. But David and Belle try to keep her safe from the mob and take her somewhere where she can be locked up. They take her to the library so she can be chained up there. But she instead chains up Belle because she believes that she deserves to die. And so she runs to the mob. Well, David and Granny end up finding her cloak in Spencer's car and realize that he's the one who killed Billy in order to undermine David. And so they hurry over before the mob gets a hold of her, and David is able to kind of talk the mob down and get the cloak on Ruby so she turns back into a human and he tells the truth about what happened. And Spencer kind of slips away as all this is happening, and David and Ruby use her super wolf senses to find him. And he's standing beside a bonfire and reveals that he really wanted to, his whole kind of purpose and all this was to get the hat, Jefferson's hat, from David so that he could destroy David's hope of getting his family back. And he throws the hat into the fire. Also, while all this is going on, Henry continues to have his dream of the fire room, and we actually get to see the dream, and in it we see that it is indeed Aurora who is in this room with him. And while he's in the dream, his hand gets burnt. And when he wakes up, with Regina's there with him, and she wakes him up, and his hand is indeed burnt in real life. So they go to see Mr. Gold, and he gives him a special necklace that will allow him to control the dream and keep him safe, and so that he can learn how to not be afraid. And he goes into the dream again, and with his new necklace, he is able to stay calm and talk to Aurora, who we see wake up in present-day fairy tale world and tell Snow and Emma that she saw a boy named Henry. And then we have fairy tale flashbacks that follow Snow and Red as they're on the run. And it's the full moon, so they split up that night because Red got a tear in her cloak and she was worried that it wouldn't protect her. But she ends up being fine. And as she goes to meet up with Snow, she runs into a man who also shapeshifts into a wolf. And he takes her to a secret lair that is full of children of the moon, as they call themselves. And Red comes face to face with her mother, Anita, who she thought was dead all this time. The wolf pack teaches Red how to kind of embrace her wolf and to control it. And then the next day, Snow finds Red there, but the Queen's men followed her, and there ends up being a little skirmish. And the man who had found Red, his name's Quinn, he is killed. And Anita is furious and wants to have revenge, so she decides that she wants to kill Snow. But Red protects Snow, and in her efforts to protect her, accidentally kills her mother. And then she and Snow leave and continue on their journey, and Red has a new control over her wolf. So that is what happened in the episode. What were your initial thoughts, overall thoughts of this episode? Karen?
I loved it. I mean, whenever Ruby slash Red is at the forefront of an episode, I'm happy. It was really cool to see her background and everything too.
Totally agree. What about you, Selena?
Well, I'm a big fan of Ruby, so I was really excited to see her get the second flashback episode. But I mean, I preferred last week's episode. I think after that, this sort of felt a bit like a like, you know, just like when you have a really, really, really great episode and then you go on to another episode that's good, but it was very, like, it just followed the sort of, there weren't any, like, huge reveals, in my opinion. So I was sort of, maybe I'm just bitter because there wasn't any hook in it. Maybe that's what it is. But no, I did love seeing Ruby take center stage again in the story.
I actually liked this episode a bit better than last week's. I mean, last week's was great, but sometimes I feel like the episodes where you get a lot of answers they feel a little choppier to me sometimes. Uh-huh. And so this episode I just really liked it. It was, I felt like a lot happened to propel the story forward, as well as giving us, like, this great backstory on a character that we love but don't get to see that often. And so I don't know, I really liked it.
Yeah, it was just a little tiny bit like, you know, it kind of just followed the very formulaic sort of setup of she has a mom, her mom is kind of bad, so she kills her. I don't know, it was something.
Yeah.
Missing.
Yeah, I can see that. Did you girls have any favorite quotes or moments from the show?
I loved Granny in this episode. Yeah.
She's awesome with the crossbow.
Yeah, she was so cool. My favorite line of hers was when she was talking about werewolf hearing, and she said, "It's not all it's cracked up to be, especially when you run a motel."
I know. I just died. I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah. That was a great line. What about you, Selena?
No, I think that was – I really enjoyed that. I also think that the reveal of Gus – kind of it was really exciting for me at first until, you know, we found out what happened to him. But I don't know. That was it.
I know, when he said that he was Gus and yeah. He was a mouse, I was like, oh my God, that's awesome.
It was hilarious. I also really liked seeing Ruby and Belle's friendship sort of begin to develop. And and Ruby and David's friendship is like one of my favorite things on the whole show. So it was really, really fun to see that as well. Almost ship them. Like, I can't ship them, but I like almost do because they're just so adorable. But I mean, you can't because it's Snow and Charming always. But you know,
right. Well, those are all things that we'll kind of get into in a little bit more depth here in just a second. So let's just go ahead and dive right in and talk about everything. The first thing that we saw that was pretty big this episode was that they finally found the diamonds so that they can make fairy dust. And, of course, by the end, we know that this isn't going to help them with the hat. But, I mean, the discovery of these diamonds and this potential for fairy dust, I think, is way bigger than the hat anyway. I mean, what do you guys think that this is going to mean for the people of Storybrooke? Anyone?
Well, I don't know if it's going to mean anything because they lost the hat, so... I mean, what else can they use fairy dust for? Probably a lot, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like fairy dust is kind of like the, can't think of something comparable, but it's like the thing that they can use for everything, you know? Mm. Like, sprinkle it and it'll make magic wherever you need it.
Yeah, I don't know, I guess we'll have to see, because I kind of assume that they wouldn't be able to use any kind of magic correctly until they got back to Fairytale Land.
Yeah. Do you think that that it'll have any effect on the fairies, on the nuns, that it, we know, could maybe help turn them back into fairies or something like that? Or, like, I wonder if it could, if the fairy dust would, if it was, you know, thrown on any of the people, would kind of turn them back into their fairy tale selves or something along those lines.
That's interesting. The question is if any of them will want it, because, I mean, Gus clearly felt more confident being a human than a mouse, and someone like Archie maybe would want to be a cricket again, but I don't know.
I just feel like there should be more significance to that find than just the potential for the hat, because that's an awful lot of set up for something that got destroyed in the same episode.
I hope so. I mean, unless there's a second hat out there. There was someone commented on Hypeable that the hat that what's his face threw into the fire wasn't the one that Emma made for him, so theoretically there should be another hat out there. That was it, Sarah, who said that on Hypeable.
Interesting. Do you have any thoughts to add, Karen?
I'm just thinking that if fairy dust comes into play in Storybrooke, you know, they could kind of have a riot on their hands because everybody's going to want to protect themselves and probably want a piece of it. And I can just see that road and, like, you know, everything's not going to be too good with that, depending on how they decide to let other people use it or if they're only going to let the fairies use it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, maybe it's just wishful thinking or I'm reading too much and I just really feel like this discovery is going to have far-reaching consequences on Storybrooke beyond what it was the plot device of the hat.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. So let's talk a bit about, you mentioned a little bit a while ago, Selena, David and Ruby's friendship. Let's talk about that. I mean, that was obviously a huge part of this episode and... You know, one of my favorite moments of this episode was when he said to her the line about how he didn't support Mary Margaret and he's not going to make that mistake again with Ruby. And I just thought that was really great. And I loved their friendship and the way that, you know, they were really there for each other this whole time.
I love it, too. And I actually, like, I really love the fact that it's not romantic in any way, you know? Like, we see so much of that on TV, they almost can't help but make a friendship, a romantic pairing at some point or another, you know, but I think that Megan Ori, you know, in one of her preview interviews before this episode said that she really sees the relationship between Ruby and David as that of being like brother and sister. And you can see that she kind of has a similar relationship with Snow in the fairy tale world. So I really think that is awesome and I love it.
Completely agree. What about you, Karen?
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes was near the end there where he was talking to her and she was still in the wolf form and he finally got through to her and she just sort of sat down and I just kind of went, oh, because it was so adorable and it was so, like, you know, true what he was saying and he really cared so much about her that, yeah, I really enjoy their friendship too. And I kind of just love that. The three of them, Snow, Ruby, and David, Charming. I just love that they're all like best friends. I think that's really great.
It really is. It's a nice dynamic. And it's like, because like you can tell that they're all so confident in their friendship with each other that, like, there's no jealousy, there's no suspicion or anything. Like they can totally and completely stay with it.
Yeah, and that's refreshing, too, mm-hmm. given, you know, a lot of the other characters, and especially, like, anyone who deals with Regina or deals with Rumpelstiltskin, like, you always have in the back of your mind this uncertainty as to, like, what their real motives are. And with these three, like, they're just so truthful with each other, and I love that.
And another friendship, again, as Selena kind of mentioned earlier, was the friendship between Ruby and Belle. We saw the beginnings of this a little, you know, a few episodes ago, and haven't seen much of it since then. And this was the first time that we got to really see that friendship has continued. I mean, like when Belle interceded and helped Ruby when she was, you know, when Gus was hitting on her. Which we can talk about that too, because that was adorable.
That really was. That was awesome. I loved it. And she didn't even realize, like, what, because I thought they were really going to have a girls' night. So I was like, oh, that's so cute. But then she was just doing it to help out Ruby. I loved it.
I know.
Although what Ruby was doing turning him down, I will never know.
Well, I think it was.
I mean, he can sew. He's hot. Sorry.
Well, she was turning him down that night because
I know,
into a wolf. And, you know,
yeah, I get it.
That would be a pretty bad first date.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked that. You know, they were already had a good enough friendship that Belle could see that she was, you know, kind of squirmish and could go in and help her. And it's just a really nice friendship. And the whole scene between them in the library.
Yeah. Even though I wonder if Belle's going to be a bit pissed off at her next time they see each other.
I don't think she will be.
No. She doesn't seem like the type to hold grudges.
No. If she can forgive Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
She can forgive Ruby.
Yeah. And I liked, you know what I liked? I liked seeing the scene between Belle and Ruby as well, because I haven't been quiet about the fact that I'm not a huge Rumbel shipper, and I'm not really feeling that relationship yet, and I haven't really been feeling Belle, but I'm really starting to warm up to her. I like that she's interacting with some of the other characters now. Just to voice an unpopular opinion that's sure to get us in trouble.
Well, and I mean, I love the story of Beauty and the Beast, and I loved that episode, so mm-hmm. I did really like that ship. But I agree, it's really nice to get to see Belle outside of the Rumpelstiltskin Mr. Gold storyline, to see her get to be her own person and to develop her own life instead of only being attached to him. Yeah, it's a nice friendship. Karen, did you have anything you wanted to add about that?
Not really. I liked the line too when Belle said, "Trust me, I'm sort of an expert when it comes to rehabilitation." That was really funny. I want to talk about Ruby and Snow though. They have a great relationship, and I love seeing that building. And what's the female version of bromance? Like girlmance or something? Because they have that.
Just friendship.
Yeah, I think that's, you don't need another word
sure.
for it.
Girls are allowed to be close friends without it being seen as being homosexual, whereas guys, it's like, oh, you're friends? Oh, it must
See
be
that,
gay.
Yeah, girls can actually just call each other girlfriends without it having to mean anything. Although, I wouldn't discount the homosexual aspect of it necessarily. I'm sure they have a lot of shippers out there.
Oh, I'm
sure.
I'm
almost positive we can find a Tumblr right now.
Yeah.
What would be their shipper name? Snooby?
Well, she's Red.
Oh, yeah. Snow Red. Oh. Red Snow. Roe.
Red.
Swite. I don't know.
Roe.
Yeah. Red White, which incidentally are the colors of the Danish flag.
Okay. And we can go off the shipping road forever, but yeah, I loved, you know, in the fairy tale flashbacks, getting to see more of their friendship as they, you know, went off together. That, oh my goodness, one of my favorite lines was when Red said to Snow, you know, my grandmother only wanted to accept the human side of me. My mom wanted me to be the wolf. You're the only person that has seen me as both.
Mm-hmm.
Or however she worded that. But that line was so great. And I think that it was really true and spoke a lot to their friendship and just the depth of the relationship between those two women.
Yeah, I love that she made that comment, you know, after she'd killed her mother, and she said, you know, Snow was saying something about family, and she said, no, I was protecting my family when I killed my mom. And mm-hmm. I love whenever they do stuff like that, when they show that, like, a friendship can be a deeper connection than the blood agree. One.
Yeah. I know those two women, like their friendship is so great, and they you just know that they're always going to have each other's backs.
Yeah.
No matter what. So what about the parallel between Ruby's journey and Red's journey to accept the wolf side of her being? I thought it was kind of cool how they juxtaposed this journey in both worlds and showed her go from this fear into acceptance and control. What did you guys think about, especially with Red and the whole, like, introduction of all of these shapeshifters or children of the moon, as they called themselves, and their little secret wolf pack lair and everything? Mm-hmm. That was an interesting addition to see them, like, together and living together in a pack and going out running. And do you think that they are, like, peaceful, or do you think that they kind of get into a, like, a pack mentality and maybe sometimes go off and, you know, kill humans or something, especially since we saw that they didn't have a very good attitude?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I mean they obviously were more than ready to kill Snow, because she, you know, in their eyes she caused the death of Quinn, but whether they would actually go out and go on the offensive, I guess that would be an interesting thing to explore, because I could imagine that they would come to see themselves as being sort of the superior race, if you will, you know, embracing that wolfy side of them and their instincts too. And I guess they would be, because that's what we saw in Ruby's village then, that wolves were bad. But, I mean, the thing that I thought was interesting to see in this particular flashback was that Anita had apparently... I mean, how was she alive? Why had she not taken Snow with Red with her when she left? You know, how did Red end up with her grandmother? All of those things were still, like, left unanswered. So I'm hoping that we get some kind of resolve to that.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about the introduction of Anita? I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I certainly didn't see that coming.
Me neither.
Her mom was alive and, like, the mistress of a pack of wolves.
Me neither, and especially because in the interviews that I've been posting on Hypeable, you know, Megan Ori was talking about this new character, Anita, and she was going, oh yeah, you know, she's sexy, she's dangerous, she's beautiful, her and Red are going to have a really interesting connection. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, what's this go on? Maybe it's like some kind of weird, like, mass, you know, like they might, like, sexualize the pack a little bit more, I was thinking. So when she came out and she was like, yeah, I'm your mother, I was like, what? That's so weird. And she doesn't look that much older than Red either. So that really threw me off. Even though Red was acting, like, quite young, you know, the actress in this, so I think she was meant to be quite young. But I really liked her. I thought she was a very interesting presence. That's kind of why I was talking about potentially seeing more of her origin story, because I'd really like to see the character again.
Yeah, I was completely surprised too by Anita. I didn't see that coming at all. And I remember a couple of months ago, I think, when they were talking about the two new characters that were coming, they said Anita and Quinn were the two characters, and everybody was thinking, oh, well, maybe Quinn's Merlin and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And I sort of had that stuck in my head. And when she said that she was Ruby's mom, I was just like, never saw it coming. I was totally down a whole different path.
Mm-hmm. I was a bit disappointed she was killed off.
Do we really know that Anita is her mother? Can we trust her in believing that that's the case? Or do you think Anita might have been manipulating Red to get her to join the pack?
Well, that's what I thought at first, but then they look so much alike, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, at first that was my initial, like, ooh, this is crazy. But then, I don't know, as she was talking about it, something made me feel like she was telling the truth. I mean, that could, of course, be wrong, but
I think
that was just kind of my gut. So what do you guys think about how that whole thing with Snow played out, you know, when Anita was just so bloodthirsty for her and was like, you have to kill Snow. You said that you picked the pack, so prove it and kill your friend. And she refused. And I mean, that was intense.
Yeah. I think that's, I was kind of sad that Anita was killed off, not only because I thought it was a cool character, but also because surely having accidentally killed your own mother, I mean, that must just be insanely heartbreaking. You know, I'm surprised that Ruby, you know, because she always talked about having killed before, and we always assumed that that was quote-unquote just her, right, true love, but Ruby has essentially killed her true love and her mother. I mean, that's terrible. It's almost mm-hmm. too terrible, you know?
And it kind of shows why she's so afraid in Storybrooke when she thinks that she's out of out of control wolf again. One thing that I thought was cool between these two storylines was how in Red's storyline, you know, she had all of this support, even though they ended up being kind of crazy, but she had the support of all these people. So her like transformation and acceptance of these two parts of her person was much more enjoyable and was based on like it was a calm and supportive environment and experience where she was able to run and be safe. Whereas in Storybrooke, it was like there was so much fear and anxiety around it. And then it wasn't until she had that calming influence come in through David when she was already in her wolf form that she was able to calm down and then accept it.
Mm.
Let's talk a bit about kind of the whole thing that set all this in motion in Storybrooke with Spencer and his ridiculous vendetta against David. Like, what the heck? Charles Widmore.
Yeah, I know. Strikes again, the bastard.
But yeah, like this whole thing was just so awful. 'Cause, I mean, it was bad enough that he burned the hat and like wanted to do that for David, which was when he started with this whole thing about turning the people against you, that seemed weird because his justice that he's always wanted has been to make David have the same pain and hurt he did without, you know, not being able to have a child. So the hat thing made sense, and I mean, still twisted and awful, but like I was so this whole thing with him just like throwing poor Ruby under the bus and then killing little Gus.
I know, what the hell.
like he's a bad dude,
seriously. I mean, I don't even know what this guy's deal is. Like his malice is just, it just comes out of nowhere, because unlike, say, I don't know, Cora or Gold or Regina, this guy is not, we have to assume, evil because of magic that's corrupted him. He's just evil. And it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, carving a guy in half, I'm like, are you serious? That just was so strange to me. I do think, though, there was one thing that he said that was interesting, which was, whenever David was talking about how hard it was for him to watch Good win, and Spencer kind of had that moment when he was like, you know, you're saying good, but that's your interpretation. And I thought that was interesting that he might actually see himself as being in the right, on the good mm-hmm. side.
Mm-hmm. I can actually kind of, like, I don't agree with it, but I can see how he could have himself deluded into that, because, you know, back in the fairy tale world, he was a king of this kingdom. He had all of these subjects underneath his control, and he was responsible for them and for their well-being and making sure that they were provided for, and, you know, their land was not doing well, and so they needed money, which was the whole point behind this alliance with King Midas, which sparked all of this stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so in his head, when Charming went against that and, you know, messed all that up, Charming was the one who was bad. Charming was the one who was messing up his plans for good. And mm-hmm. so he was in the right. Like, the right thing to do would have been to marry Abigail, unite the kingdoms, and provide for all the people. But he chose the selfish path of following after true love and Snow.
You know, it's funny. This might just be because it's you, but that I'm thinking about this. But doesn't Spencer kind of remind you of King Uther and Merlin?
I, as soon as you said, because it was me, I was like, yes!
My mind is going there.
I knew you were going there, and I was like, yes!
It kind of does. Really good
comparison.
Yeah. Because he's so really clearly in the wrong, but he feels like he's so in the right. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good comparison. And so, yeah, for some reason, like, I guess just because Snow was the thing that took Charming away from his chosen path, he, like, hates the two of them and wants them to be just as miserable as Regina does.
Yeah. I don't know, by the way, this is also, like, a really random connection, and Karen, I don't know if this is going to mean anything to you yet, but speaking of him being Charles Widmore, when he said to David, he was like, blah, 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 Shepherd. Did you, not, you just not to go like,
oh my God. Oh my
for a
God.
Minute, I was like, wait, what?
I totally did not think about that until right now.
I was like, oh my God, because he is such a Jack character to begin with. David is. So he I was is. Like, wow.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That was not coincidental.
No, I don't think it was.
They totally did that on purpose. I feel so stupid for not catching that immediately. Yeah, but he's taken it to a whole nother level with what he did to Gus and what he was trying to do to Ruby. Because imagine if he had succeeded with Ruby. She would have been massacred by a mob.
I know, and what would that have achieved? I just, ugh.
Other than making David's life more miserable and full of guilt.
Yeah.
This is why Spencer scares me so much, is because he's essentially got nothing to lose. And I can really see this whole situation escalating, and I don't know how far he would be able to take it before somebody stopped him, but I'm really scared for Henry, because when we first saw him pull into Storybrooke, and, you know, he had his eyes on Charming and Henry, I just got this feeling like, you know, he's going to do anything he can to take Henry away from him, and, you know, who knows what that's going to mean for Henry, whether or not he just, you know, gets kidnapped or something, or if it's something worse.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you, Karen. Like, that's been a fear of mine this whole time, too. My only, like, hope that maybe he'll kind of leave Henry alone is that his fear of Regina will be great enough to keep him at bay, because even though Henry is completely connected to David, Henry is also Regina's son, and so she also has just as much of a vested interest in his well-being as David does. So maybe that will keep him safe. Maybe.
Yeah, let's hope so.
But probably not, because let's face it, this guy's crazy and doesn't care what he does. Because he killed Gus. Let's not forget.
I know. Can we talk about that really briefly?
Yes, like absolutely.
How they did this? Because, I mean, in Cinderella, in the Disney, first of all, this is not like a fairy tale character. This is a Disney character, Gus. And he's like the cute little chubby mouse who sews the dress. And I don't know what he says. Yeah, and I don't know what he says in the English version, because I only ever watched it in Danish. But in the Danish one, whenever they made the dress and Cinderella came in, and he was like, Happy Christmas! And I don't know if he said something
it's
else.
Happy birthday.
Is it really? Oh my God! That's interesting. That's funny. Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. Funny how they translate these things sometimes. But no, they had this cute little adorable mouse character, and they threw him into Once Upon a Time, and they carved him in half. I mean, what the hell? I think, like, this is just, I know it's just a tiny character, but it kind of proves that nobody is safe, you know? Like, they aren't just, I know they've killed off characters before, but anyone could die at any time, I think, now. It's, like, really terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point, that it doesn't matter, like, who the character is, how cute, how innocent, or whatever, like, anyone can be killed.
Yeah.
Definitely. That was so shocking to me, that they brought him in and gave us his back. They gave us his background to make us, and maybe that's why they gave, you know what, maybe that's why they gave him that particular background of Gus. To make us all instantly be like, oh, it's Gus. So that when he was the one that was killed, we were all like, oh.
That's probably why, but it was mean.
Yeah, to make us feel a connection to this character that they were introducing to kill.
Right. I feel like next they're gonna, like, smash the teacup, you know?
Oh. Did everybody else just, like, feel like, oh, my heart. I was like, don't hurt the teacup.
I know.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
And that's just an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Love how invested we all get into these characters and stories. Well, okay, so as part of Spencer's vendetta, he did destroy the hat, which was their, basically where all of their hope was to get Snow and Emma back from Fairy Tale World. So what do you think their next move is going to be? What do you think David's going to do next?
I think he's going to go track down Jefferson again, maybe find out if he can make another hat, and maybe that's when he'll find out that there is another one that Emma made.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to...
Maybe now that they have the fairy dust, if Jefferson were to make another hat, they could still use the fairy dust on the new hat?
Maybe. Yeah, that would make sense.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not really sure... I mean, obviously, there have been, like, a variety of different promos. Spoilers come out that I've been posting on High Bibble, so I'm not going to comment on those particular things that I know. But, I mean... presumably, David is just going to have this kind of half-hearted background story in the next few episodes of him trying to track down another hat or looking for different ways. Because, I mean, we have to assume that Emma and Snow, they're getting closer and closer to making a portal on their side. So presumably, that's what's going to get them home, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the end. So whatever David does is might not matter that much.
Definitely,
but maybe he'll be caught, like, he might be a bit busy within the next couple of weeks, considering everything that's happening with Henry right now, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see what David's next move is. And so, speaking of Henry, let's talk about this dream and the craziness that's going on with it. Last week, we discussed a little bit what we kind of thought that the dream was. And, I mean, Karen... We were kind of on the money. Some of our details and specifics may have been a little off, but I think we were pretty good about our interpretation.
Yeah, definitely.
But the one thing that I did not see coming and was the most surprised about was how Henry got burned in the dream and then his hand was really burned.
Yeah.
I mean, that takes it to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that potentially they could work out some kind of way of crossing over that way? Like, if people can have the dreams and if they can actually, some part of themselves can be transported to that place, do you think that there's a way that they could either transport themselves into the room and onto the other side, or just transport themselves there so that they can communicate with each other?
I definitely think something like that is possible. I almost got the feeling that something like that might even happen from the previews for next week.
Uh-huh.
Like, they were going to be looking into that. Yeah, what about you, Karen? What do you think about this dream and all that?
I'm not really sure. I mean, part of me is just like, is this really a dream? Like, it can't be. If he really got burned, you know, he must be going to a different world when he falls asleep.
Yeah.
But whether or not, you know, anybody else could get there without having the sleeping curse put on them, I'm not really sure. Maybe Regina's just going to start handing out sleeping curses and people are going to have to get woken up and then they can go back to the Enchanted Forest or something, as ridiculous as that sounds. But
one at a time.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't really know. I hope that this is a way for them to cross over, but it seems fairly dangerous given all the fire and everything.
Yeah.
And I still don't really know, like, what, if it is a different world, you know, what world is it? What else is there? If it's literally just a room on fire, or if there's some more significant meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Hades.
It could be.
Ooh.
That would be terrifying, though. Kind of hope it's not.
Well, I think at the very least, especially now that Henry is able to have much more control during the dream, he and Aurora will be able to communicate with one another, which will allow Snow and Emma to communicate with David and Regina and whomever else. So they can at least kind of know what the other is doing to try to get back. It's quite the the complicated walkie-talkie system.
I know.
But yeah, so I mean, that whole thing is really interesting. And one other thing I wanted to bring up from all this was, the emphasis once again on the consequences and ramifications of magic. You know, Gold says to Regina, like, you used a curse without fully understanding what it did. And she was like, well, until Henry, I didn't care what happened to anybody once they were under a sleeping spell. And so I mean, they really do like to emphasize this fact that magic has consequences. Like, there's a price, and there are things that could happen that you don't ever consider or know about.
Do you think that Gold had some kind of hidden agenda in giving Henry that charm? He was like, this one's on me. And I do wonder if he's going to want something back from Henry eventually.
That was my major question, because I don't know. Part of me, like, I'm kind of split, because, you know, Rumpelstiltskin misses his son, and maybe he is honestly just being nice, and maybe Belle is changing him and he's just helping out Henry. But on the other hand, I mean, he always asks for something in return, and he always has this grand scheme going on in the background that nobody sees coming. So I don't know.
I don't think that he would ever use it for Henry, but I could see him one day going to Regina and being like, I helped your son and didn't ask for anything in return for him, so you can do this for me. Like, I could see him manipulating Regina with it, maybe.
That's true.
Because for all of Rumple, Mr. Gold's faults and everything, he really does have a heart for children because of his son. You know, I mean, all the evil that he's done has been for his child.
Yeah.
And so I don't see him doing something to cause Henry harm or to manipulate Henry beyond like a simple manipulation, you know, but I don't know. Maybe that's me giving more credit to him than he deserves, but.
Well, considering the episode description for next week, which I guess we're going to go into talking about in a second, maybe Mr. Gold has his own reasons for wanting Henry to be more able to be alert in this world.
Yeah, there could be something like that too. I could see that being part of it, his motivation.
Yeah, and I mean, Emma still owes Mr. Gold a favor, so maybe Mr. Gold just wants Emma back in Storybrooke so that she can fulfill that, and his whole scheme.
I mean, you seriously never know what's going on inside of his head. He's so complicated. There's so much in there. So that pretty much covers it for this week's episode. And we saw the trailer for next week's episode, which is going to, 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks. I know.
Yes. That's right. So remember, it did say 2 weeks, and episode 8 is going to be called Into the Deep. And the description that we have posted up on Hypeable says, Cora does everything in her power to steal the compass away from Mary Margaret and Emma and her quest to find the entrance to Storybrooke. Meanwhile, in order to protect Henry from further damage, Regina and Mr. Gold must put David's life in jeopardy in an attempt to put him in contact with Mary Margaret across the lands to give her vital information that could help her and Emma return through the portal back to Storybrooke.
So they'll be putting David in a sleeping curse, essentially.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Ooh,
which is, I wonder if there's going to be some way, like kind of what we were talking about, where they, where David is going in Henry's place.
Yeah. Well, here's the question, though. Snow, I mean, in the last episode, I don't know if you guys touched on this in the last episode of the podcast, but whenever she was comforting Aurora, she kind of alluded to the fact that she still had the dreams. You know, she was saying to Aurora how, you know, they do fade, but you could see on her face that she was probably lying. But then they haven't seen her in the room with Henry and Aurora.
We did touch on that. And that was something that was really interesting to me because, you know, last episode we weren't 100% sure. I mean, we all suspected, but you didn't know for sure if it was Aurora and Henry in the room together. And so that is interesting. If Snow's having a similar dream, why she wouldn't be in the room unless she's in a different place within the same world.
Maybe.
And maybe David is somehow, because of his connection with Snow, can somehow reach her. Because it is interesting in the description that it says, in an attempt to put him in contact with Mary Margaret as opposed to Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
who's the one that we know is in this room. So
who do you think this episode's centric character is? Because I haven't been able to work it out.
Maybe David.
I just feel like, you know, except for Cora, who I do not think is the central character because of the episode description for the following week, which we're not going to touch on now. But, I mean, Regina has had, like, what, two or three centrics in this season already? And
yeah.
Both Mary Margaret and David have had quite a few. Actually, it's pretty much only been Mary Margaret, David, Snow, and Mary Margaret, David, Regina, and Gold so far. So yeah. It's like, I almost hope it's not one of the four of them again, but I don't know who else it could be. I would think your guess of David is probably a good one.
Unless this is an episode that has so much going on in Storybrooke and present day fairy tale world that they don't have a flashback.
Really? You think so? Because that would be the first episode ever where they didn't have a flashback.
I mean, I'm not saying that's a for sure thing, but it's
I mean, that's
possible?
The thing. That's the thing we always wanted them to do in Lost, and they never really did it. So, I mean, I would love to see an episode that was all current timeline, but I'm pretty sure we're going to have flashbacks.
Yeah. I don't know. He's the one that makes the most sense to me. I mean, because I don't see it being Regina.
No, not again.
Yeah. Unless it's like Snow and they are showing like the dreams, a flashback showing the dreams that she suffered through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could be that. But I guess they could also, that would make the most sense, actually. Although I guess they could show David comforting her comforting her through the flashbacks or through her dreams in the flashbacks, and then instead of showing them, just showing him reacting to her sleeping or something.
Mm-hmm.
Either of those two would work. What do you think, Karen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say either David or Mary Margaret. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say David. Just pick one, but
okay.
I really have no idea. Yeah.
Well, and let's be honest, whichever one it is pretty much going to involve the other.
Yeah, that's true.
So a flashback from one is kind of a flashback with both.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. Well, last week, the poll that we posted was, what did August show Neil to get him to agree to leave Emma? And only 1% of you thought that it was spelled to get him to agree to leave her, so that it was just some kind of a spell to make him do it. 4% thought that he saw something from his future. 7% thought that it was something from his human past. 12% said that the box was able to show him a glimpse of the Enchanted Forest, and a whopping 76% of you guys said that it was something from his fairy tale past. So,
wow. So most
yeah.
people seem to believe that he does have a fairy tale past then.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's, yeah, I know. I'm surprised at how weighted all the votes were for that one. So very interesting. So thank you guys very much for participating in our poll. That is very interesting to see what you guys thought.
I would definitely have voted that last one too. I hope that he has a fairy tale past, that he's not quote unquote just a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So very, very interesting. So this week's poll is going to be about Mr. Gold and the question that we were debating a little earlier in him giving this gift of the necklace to Henry, and, you know, whether or not he's going to want payment. And if he does, is he going to want payment from Henry? Will he want payment from Regina? Or will this be the first time that he gives something without wanting anything in return, which would be very interesting. So be sure to vote and let us know what you guys think. And now we're going to look at some feedback that you guys have left us last week.
This is from Sarah, and she says she has two questions. One, why didn't they just put Ruby underneath the library where it held a dragon for 28 years? Very good question. And the second one was, the hat Jefferson had wasn't the one Emma made him, was it? Because they got it from Regina and not from Jefferson. So theoretically, there's still another hat out there that we know works because it saved Jefferson from dying when he went through the window of his house. And we heard the whooshing and popping noises that made it seem like that was what had happened. And yeah, we touched on this a little bit earlier, and I would imagine there's another hat out there. And I guess if David's being any sort of logical, he's going to go back to Jefferson and see if he can get him another hat or something.
Mm-hmm. And Jefferson, you know, the first time that they went to him, he was so preoccupied with his daughter and whether or not she would accept him and all that, that he wasn't really even paying attention to their right. dilemma. So maybe he would be more help now. And with the Ruby thing, they probably didn't even know about that under that area under the library, because I don't think that that was really common knowledge.
Right. Only Emma, Regina, and Gold would know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but very, very good points that were brought up by Sarah.
Lindsay writes, "This may be a stretch, but when they were describing the Red Room, all I could think of was my favorite Edgar Allan Poe story about the Mask of the Red Death. It's a great read, and I think it's public domain now. Just a thought." Oh, so that might be what they're playing around with in the story. Mm-hmm. I haven't read it. I have no idea what this is.
I haven't either, but no. They could definitely be using that for inspiration for the room, which would be really cool.
Yes. Well, it's that or Disney's Hercules. Maybe that yes, should have been the poll.
Please. Please. That's my favorite Disney movie, and aww. I would die if they did that.
And aww. It's kind of like they had to lead them out, but they can't look back or they'll disappear forever. That would be awesome.
Oh, my yeah. goodness. Oh, yeah, there's so many possibilities with that room. Yeah. There's just no telling.
I read that story a really long time ago, and I barely remember what it's about. It's kind of weird, but given that it's Edgar Allan Poe, you know, don't expect yeah. anything different. But right. I know some people are kind of not really liking the idea of how they used Frankenstein, some of like the more literary stuff rather than the Disney kind of things, fairy tales, but I think it would be great if they did something like this. I like the idea that they're not just pulling from fairy tales, but from all kinds of stories. I think that gives them a whole new view and a new path to go down, and that would be really cool. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
This is Ning, and they say, "This is not so much a feedback than an observation I had of the episode Tallahassee and the scene where Emma was sort of hiding on the giant stone guard outside the giant's castle. I noticed that the stone guards were in the image of the Chinese terracotta warriors. I'm not sure if it's just a coincidence or if it could possibly be a link to Mulan. Perhaps Jack equals Shang."
That's really cool.
I hope not, though, because then he's dead.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
then again, she does kind of have a new true love now in Philip, didn't she?
And he's dead, too.
Maybe. Poor Mulan. Allegedly. Allegedly dead.
Poor Mulan.
For all we know, he could be down in that red room, too, somewhere.
True.
I'm calling it right now. It's my theory.
Selena's theory.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Brianna writes, "Between Regina being so concerned for Henry and Rumpel being so kind with the whole necklace thing, I'm kind of loving seeing the bad guys so good. Also, Henry's line from the promo, 'I'm tired of reading about heroes, I'm ready to be one,' added another tier to tonight's total." I kind of agree. I think that, I mean, even though it's kind of weird that both Regina and Gold, the antagonists of the show, are like just hanging out and being helpful. I kind of like it. It's kind of like allowing us to breathe a little bit, I think.
I do too. And it's not like they aren't providing us plenty of other baddies.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, imagine between Spencer, King George, yeah. Cora, and then Hook, if Rumpel and Regina were also being bad, like,
yeah.
That'd be overwhelming.
It does make me nervous, though, because I feel like Gold is biding his time right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think yeah. that at least one, if not both of them, is gonna backslide.
I mean, I think Regina is a ticking time bomb. You know, I've said that before mm-hmm. last time I was on, that I think that it's just a matter of time before she's gonna snap with all that evil magic sort of brewing inside of her.
Yeah, I agree. So thank you, everyone, for all of your wonderful feedback. We really do love reading it. We really, really appreciate it. And if you would like to send us some theories or comment on anything from this week's episode or anything that we said in the podcast, we would love to hear from you. You can contact us through email at Onceable, which is Onceable, at Hypeable, H-Y-P-A-B-L-E .com. So Onceable at Hypeable.com, Or you can tweet us at Once Upon News, which is run by Selena and is fabulous. There's all kinds of Once Upon a Time news and fun little things that she tweets out all the time. So you can follow us and tweet us there. Or you can go to Hypeable.com and leave us your comments on the show notes for this episode of the podcast. And you can also leave us comments and feedback over at the fan forums at Hypeable at forum.hypeable.com. So many, many different ways that you can get in contact with us, and we would love to hear from you guys. So thanks again, Selena, for being on with us again this week. It was fabulous having you back, as always.
I'm always glad when I'm actually able to come on the show.
I know. It's so hard with just time zones and things. It makes life difficult.
Yeah. It's not because I love Once Upon a Time any less than I did last season, though. I absolutely, absolutely love it. I think this season's been spectacular so far.
I completely agree. So that pretty much wraps up everything for this episode. And we will see you guys again. And don't forget that it is going to be 2 weeks until we have a new episode of Once Upon a Time. So we will talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.